Welcome, reanimated fans, to this week's episode. I am H.A. Conrad, broadcasting to you somewhat, not live, no, just after the fact, in Brooklyn, with my friend and co-host, the intrepid Stuart Tiffin. Hello.
Hi. Hey, how's it going?
And you're on the West Coast, as always, despite my wish for you to fly out here someday. Anyway. We are talking a lot about news items today. There's quite a bit to get through. But we are recapping the film Zombie 2. I'm not quite sure what title we should go by. We'll get into why there is so much confusion when we go into our review. But this was a 1979 Italian zombie film, and it was directed by Lucio Fulci. And the original screenplday was by Dardano Sacchetti. And it was supposed to serve as a sequel to Romero's Dawn of the Dead. And there's a lot to talk about here. So I'm looking forward to talking about that with you. But before we get into that, we have many, many little news tidbits. So do you want to...
So many.
Jump into it.
I was happy to find a new trailer for an upcoming zombie film with something of a unique take, except that it also seems to rip right off of Bird Box. Bird Box? Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed that too.
Yeah. So. But, you know, navigating the zombie apocalypse sightless is a thing, like, for real. Let's get into that. Let's do it. And this isn't someone who was born, with like a sight impairment. He's been recently blinded, I guess, and so the trailer kind of shows you that this is the way this is going to go. It's just a short YouTube trailer. I think it looks like a lot of fun, and I'm excited for it.
Right. So this is called Dead Sight, and
yeah, that's probably what it was called.
And I think he's supposed to be partially blind, so maybe this means that later on something happens that he maybe gains more of the sight back. But it's directed by Jesse Thomas Cook, and it has Adam Seybold as the main character, Liv Collins, Rye Barrett, and it looks, I mean, at least the trailer looks fairly good.
I think the trailer, yeah, it looks like quality.
The effects look good, so. Yeah, I'm going to be interested in watching this and reviewing it. But I also noted the same similarities between this and Bird Box. So I'm like, oh, okay, let's see.
Bird Box and Day of the Triffids, it's like kind of nice mixture. I like it.
Right. But yeah, maybe we look at this in the future. But the trailer is pretty solid. So looking forward to seeing that. And I think that gets released in August is what it looked like. We will circle back as more news about this gets released. But in other news, things that have already been released, Fear the Walking Dead is back and doing really well, at least with the premiere episode in the ratings.
Doing really well amongst its peers, but not doing as well as it did last season, apparently. I saw a subsequent article. So the article that I'm putting in the show notes is just like Sunday cable ratings. Oh, Fear the Walking Dead was the best. Yeah, okay. Not huge surprise, I guess. Or maybe it is, considering how the ups and downs of this series. But then when you compare it with last year's crossover double feature event, where, you know, it went directly from The Walking Dead to Fear the Walking Dead season 4, that apparently blew it out of the water, or at least was higher than this year. And then I guess that's not surprising.
No, but we shall see. We'll see what happens with it. I have not yet watched it, so I have to play catch up. Did you watch it yet?
Oh, yeah. So then we shouldn't talk about the next news link. I don't know if you've seen it already, but there's some more crossovers, not in terms of characters, but in terms of symbology and potential factions in this first episode of season 5 that blend back to The Walking Dead. So we'll not talk about that until you're caught up. We can talk about that when we start to review this season, which will be shortly in the coming weeks. So
awesome. And next up, I didn't get too far down this rabbit hole, but
it is a total rabbit hole.
It looked like it was, and I was like, I am not going to click on that link. So why don't you tell us what this one is about?
This is dumb. This was BBC clickbaiting me. Which, you know, bravo, BBC, you finally figured out how to get me to click on things. Put the word zombie in the headline. So it's a short video, and we've talked about these kinds of things before. It's a short video to a guy who's making modular homes that can be built off the grid, and they're built out of some sort of like spray gun insulation foam. They have water recycling capabilities. They have solar power built in, and the windows can self tint. And then at the end of the video, you have to like wait for the payoff. The guy's like, "Oh, so they're zombie proof? How exactly?" And he goes, "Well, the way I understand it, zombies sense heat, and because our house is built out of insulation foam, they will not be able to sense you."
Yeah, like, wow. I did. This was a new piece of mythology that I was unaware of, but
broken on BBC of all places. So yep. That was the it feels dumber when you say it out loud.
Yep. And in other news, this is just a quick haha. Given all the sort of confusion about the title of the movie we're going to recap review today, but Disney has come out with a Zombies 2 film and has started the casting for that, and so just
I'm confused here. Wasn't Zombies the name of their show? Like, that wasn't that a TV show?
Yeah, so I don't know, maybe it's just something with Zombies 2 being in the title that just causes a lot of confusion. I don't know, man. Yeah. But anyway, this was just a funny haha link that I threw in there. Also, I did not put this in the show notes, but this was something that Bill and I went to see yesterday. One of our friends, she was in this production, which is basically called Gone in 60, which is this series of 1 minute plays or 1 minute skits. And
starring Nicolas Cage, or
not quite. But amongst these skits was a skit called "To Grandmother's House We Go." And it was by Thomas J. Mizoraka. And they basically, these two teenagers are talking about visiting their grandmother's house. And in one of the girls has a grandmother is a zombie. And it was actually very cute. So I just was laughing about it. Because Bill was like, you should talk about that in the podcast. So throwing it out there. It was like about 35 minutes, and they went through like 35 different skits. So
the big bad wolf as a zombie?
Kind of, but grandma, it was basically grandma as a zombie. So basically that was like just a couple funny things like, oh, whenever I try to hug my grandmother, she tries to eat my brains, and like all that kind of thing. So
wow.
Mm. So there you have it.
There it is.
And then did you get to look at the article about the comic book resource?
So I know that there was some huge The Walking Dead comic book news that broke this week because of the most recent issue. I haven't read it. I'm not caught up.
Okay, so me neither.
I'm hesitant to dig into that. I know that they killed off a major character, and that's what I assume this article is related to, saying that Rick Grimes is Kirkland's best ever creation.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we'll leave it there. I didn't go through it for the same reason. But it was quite extensive, and there were, I started to read it. I don't think it had that many spoilers. Again, I honestly skimmed it because I was afraid to skim it too far. But basically, it was just talking about the evolution of the character of Rick Grimes and had some interesting points in there. So maybe we leave this for another day. But
I think that brings us to our movie.
Yes, it does.
Which of the titles should we call it? Should we call it Zombie 2 or Sanguella, Island of the Living Dead, Zombie Flesh Eaters, Zombie the Dead Walk Among Us, yes. Glee, Ultimi Zombie, Voodoo, L'Enfer des Zombies, Zombie 2, The Dead Are Among Us, and finally, Nightmare Island. Those are all titles under which this film has been released. Hence my confusion. And yours last
and
week.
And mine. Like, I was like,
I don't think
this
is a movie that we can review because I can't find it anywhere.
Yeah. So there was a lot to do. Like, there was a lot of things going on with this film. And one of the biggest things, I mean, I guess it was supposed to be a sequel, or it was serving as, their idea was it would serve as a sequel to George Romero's Dawn of the Dead. So they made this, or it was, they made this as, I guess, as an intentionally to do this, but I don't think Romero was on board with this. So basically they had to change the title of the movie. And then there's other things about it. It's definitely like a grindhouse gore horror film. And thus gained it. It became one of it was added to the UK's nasty video list, which meant it had really disgusting violence and gore, which we should talk about just in today's, looking at it through today's perspective.
It's kind of like you were mentioning before we started recording, it's funny that we're viewing this right after Planet Terror, for sure.
Correct. And, you know, it's interesting because Fulci didn't get as much play as some other Italian horror directors. And, you know, he suffered from a lot of poor health. There was a lot of, there was a lot of controversy that he had with his co-creators, just like a lot of drama and that kind of thing. Where he would it looks like this happened a few times, so it's interesting that it kept happening. But he would get very upset if his name was included in like certain movie titles because he felt like these things were not up to snuff in terms of, and he didn't have anything to do with these movies, which makes you wonder, well, how did they put your name on the movie in the first place? I don't know. But because of his ill health, apparently the quality of his movies suffered in later years. And he had, you know, he had hepatitis and cirrhosis and just a lot of issues. And he apparently was quite upset because he didn't get the acclaim that some of his contemporaries got, specifically Dario Argento. So, you know, I guess he had some, and they ultimately decided to collaborate on something, and apparently Argento said it was because he seemed so frail and he felt bad for him. But in any case, this film, there's a lot, like, if you're looking at it from, like, a cheesy zombie point of view, and a grindhouse point of view, I can see why this has become a cult favorite, if people could actually find it. And I kind of feel like maybe it didn't get a lot of acclaim for a couple of reasons. One is that the release was not really done well. It was done under many different titles. Because of the whole UK nasty video list, it ended up being released unrated so that it wouldn't receive an X rating, I guess. I feel like
that's part of what makes a film a cult film, though, is it's right. hard to find and
right.
like in the olden days, right?
Right.
And can I just go on record right up front saying, as much as I kind of despise the Sharknadoes and I will say the Planet Terrors for trying so hard to achieve this, this movie does it effortlessly.
It
and
does.
So I love it. You know.
I do, and I know, like, there's a few scenes I want to talk about, but the shark scene in this is just,
oh god,
wow. So anyway, it seems kind of, I had not actually heard of this until recently, and it's rare for me to not be aware of something like this. And so, you know, I kind of feel like this is probably going to gain more acclaim, perhaps. I don't know. It just seems, but it's interesting because the only place that I could actually find it was by doing a free trial subscription to Shudder, which I don't subscribe to.
I just rented it on YouTube.
Oh, so I didn't think about that. I just looked at it.
I did. That was the first place I saw it was to have to do the Shudder thing on Amazon Prime. And I was like, well, I don't really want to do a monthly thing. Although you and I should probably be like,
I know, we probably should just do
top tier subscribers to Shudder. However, I didn't want to do that. So I was just like, oh, where else is it? I Googled and it was on YouTube. So I just rented it for $4 on YouTube.
Yeah. So, but in any case, I think one of the reasons maybe holding it back is because you just can't have access to it.
It's a little harder to find then. But I mean, for a film this old, yeah, a little bit understandable.
But man, it is a fun film.
And it's short. It's only 128 minutes.
It's got a pharaoh in it. It has Tisa Farrow, who looks a lot like Mia Farrow. It's got a pretty decent cast. So I don't know. I just thought that this was, I think this is definitely an underappreciated little gem of
the music.
The music.
Oh my God. I love the theme. I can't think of it right now, but it's synthesizer heavy.
Yes.
They do a lot with their music to amp up the tension in different scenes. Some of the Foley work is garbage and it sounds like it was done Yeah. You know, through a phone, maybe? I don't
possibly, but agreed. But, I mean, I think that that adds a little bit to it. And then the budget of this film, they keep talking about how small of a budget is for this. I mean, given the scope of this film, probably, and they filmed in, like, three different locations, not inexpensive locations. So they filmed in New York, they filmed in Italy, and then they filmed in Santo Domingo, or the, around Santo Domingo. So that's, like, three pretty, you know, like, places that are far away from each other. But it was 410 million pounds that this cost.
No, 410,000, right?
No, million.
I could have sworn it was... Oh, yep. That's an absurd amount of money.
Correct. And then it apparently has made $3 billion at the box office. So I feel like something has to be off.
There's
with this.
A decimal place that's wrong there.
Okay. So I thought the same thing and I was like, this is odd. So
that would make it the most, like, more expensive than Titanic. And
right. So I think.
Million?
I think we have to say that it's probably 410,000 pounds and it maybe made $3 million at the box office. That is my guess. Let us try to find this out. But in any case. It has a lot of, you know, different places. It had some effects. A lot of the effects were very gory and insane. And there was, like, this whole underwater sequence that was, like, you know, also, I think, one of the best parts of this film. So, in any case, let's jump into the storyline. Do you want to kick it off?
Yeah. So the best parts of the beginning, there's a little scene with Menard. So there are huge plot problems with this film, too. I just want to throw that out there, that it's not all rosy and beautiful. But you don't really know how many holes the plot has until you get to the end of the movie. But it starts with the scene of this guy who will find out is Dr. Menard intoning something, shooting a zombie, and then the boat is in the harbor. What it's like near Staten Island, I guess, because it almost gets hit by a ferry.
Yep.
And it shows
the Staten Island ferry go by it, which is incredible. So just, it's like a ghost ship, basically.
Yeah. And you have these two Port Authority cops who are referred to as the Coast Guard.
I know, there's lots of questions. It's definitely somebody who isn't aware of how these things work in New York, which
is
kind of funny.
A production question that I have, which is, like, most of these actors are English, like native English speakers, Americans or Brits, but... It's the whole crew is Italian and they're filming a lot of it in the States. And so
right.
I'm like, I don't really understand why they chose to shoot or set it in New York.
Yeah, I don't know either. Maybe it may have had to do with Tisa Farrow's schedule. Who knows? But
maybe.
I thought the same thing. But it was a bit curious. But they did it. And I mean, that could not have been inexpensive. My guess is that they probably did this without getting permission, is my guess.
Well, yeah, it was only a couple of scenes, except for the bridge one at the very end, that
right.
they must have had
permission
for that. But the synthesizer music is so good.
These yes.
cops are doofuses. And they're like, we're going to get a reward for bringing in this boat. Like,
yeah.
What kind of police? Who gets rewards
right.
in New York?
And also, we should point out that the composer was Fabio Frizzi. And he did a lot of he scored a lot of Fulci's works. It is interesting to read a little bit of the background of the soundtrack for this specifically. You know, he's got, like, some of it was influenced by the Beatles and other stuff like that. And it just was like, this score was incredible.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. To me, it was awesome. Some other interesting little scenes in this first act are, like, this newspaper guy, Peter West, is a total D-bag.
Mm-hmm.
The way he ambushes the woman, what's her name? I call her Boat Daughter in my notes because I could never figure out what her name was.
Boat Daughter?
Yeah, it's her daddy's boat.
Yes, I know, but I thought it was Anne was her name, maybe.
Could be. Either way, she's like one of the only characters who doesn't really get referred to by her name very much in the movie, so I kind of lost track.
She doesn't.
But Boat Daughter goes on the boat for some reason to, like, find out what happened to her daddy, because her daddy's boat showed up in New York with a zombie on it.
Yep.
Although that doesn't really make the news. And there's a newspaper man in there already, and he, like, puts his hand over her mouth and then makes her make out with him.
It was kind of weird. It's like he kind of grabs her from the dark and then is like, don't scream. And it's like,
Whatever, who wouldn't scream?
Yeah. And her name is Ann Bowles.
Ann Bowles.
Yep, Ann Bowles.
That's her character's name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I thought that that was funny and odd. There's also a funny scene with Ann Bowles getting interviewed by a couple of detectives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, there's a lot of, like, funny B-movie stuff going on here. But so after getting grabbed by this journalist and then being,
Assaulted,
basically. Like, just do exactly what I tell you. This is the only way we're going to get out of this situation.
And he, like, pretends that they're a couple, and then she, like, joins in. And, yeah. I mean, I think that's how they try to, like, make them have, like, a connection.
But they
don't. It's kind of weird.
No.
But then suddenly they're willing to go off to these tropical islands together.
To Matul.
Yes. And this is the thing, is that we know from, like, the little sort of newsroom scene with him that he's fairly wealthy. Like, he's the son of the guy who bought the newspaper. So, right. And then he's all into, like, he tells them, oh, can you fix the tickets for me and all this stuff, which is a little strange. But anyway, he all, like, has basically plotted to get down to this island to get to the bottom of what happened to her dad. Because her
dad... I sure wish that my newspaper ever had the budget to just send me somewhere with no promise of a story at any time.
Maybe you should try it.
be like, I need to go to the islands to follow up on this story. I'm not going to file anything.
Right.
Ever.
Right. So anyway, off they go. And that brings us to the next sort of portion of this film. Where they go off and they're looking in search of her father, who had contracted this mysterious illness. This is the thing, is that the letter basically says that he's going to die. So that's kind of weird. And it's sort of like, well, then why do you need to go and find out what happened to him? I don't know. This seems a little weird.
Once you start looking at this plot, I'm telling you, it just, you don't want to look too closely at it. You just want to experience this film.
Right,
in the
true.
Moment, and then never think about right. why people are doing things.
And also, we should point out that, so zombie attacks one of the cops in the morgue. So we leave that sort of storyline in New York.
Yeah, and they don't really even hint
they
at
don't
it. Oh, no,
hint
they did.
At it.
They did. During the autopsy, his hand moves. I forgot.
Yep.
Because the coroner is being a real douche to his assistant, like telling him that his scalpel's too blunt.
Yep.
That's how you know they're all going to die. But then, yeah, they just totally drop that thread. And we go off to the islands.
Where I have to say, just from a note of, like, production, all these poor people are so sunburned throughout throughout these sections. It's like, oh my God, like, they are so sunburned. It's painful to watch, like, every single one of them, except for Ms. Farrow. She seems to be covered up a little bit. But
which one's her? Which one's she?
Anne, the one who you can never remember. The boat daughter.
Boat daughter does not get, because she's wearing, like, long sleeves and right. pants. She's not nude all the time like the other
everybody else.
Character.
Everybody else. Okay. But in any case, they're there on the island. And one of the funniest part, just initially, one of the funniest parts, they're in, like, this crazy, like, insane 70s, like, tank car, like, being driven around the island. And they're basically bribing the driver to find somebody to take them out on a boat on the islands, which it's like, if you've ever been to any of these places, people, like, make money off of tourists all the time, like, driving around on boats. So it was sort of, you know, I get it that he was trying to extort them, but then it was like he just drops them off at a random arena because
he's
they
like,
need to.
Oh, I heard that there were some Americans here.
Right. But also, why would you just drop them off randomly? And he's like, yeah, good, just no direction at all. Just walk down that pier. Maybe you'll get lucky and give me some money in the meantime. It was just, like, really a funny, strange exchange. And then they, of course, immediately find the Americans who, like, there's nobody else on this pier. There's nobody else. Like,
they couldn't afford to put other people on that pier.
I know.
Not with their $410 million budget.
I know.
Pound.
And they run into.
That's where we meet Susan and Brian.
Yes.
And
who
I
are
will
very
admit
sunburned.
That I didn't remember Susan's name until after she died. Because
they said Susan.
He was like, oh, no, Susan. I'm like, oh, that was her name. I just called her Nudie.
Nudie, I know. That was like, okay. Fulci, you're so Italian, man.
Well, she loves to swim in the buff.
Yep.
Like, there's two scenes of her. Every time she comes out of the water, she's naked. You're just like,
and
what?
sunburned. And also, her prep to get into the water to scuba dive, because that was the thing, is that Brian and Susan are off on a pleasure cruise around these islands. They're just going to swim and eat and sleep. And then they think, oh, you know what? Why don't we just take these two people, and they want to go to a cursed island, so why don't we just make a little detour for them? Weird. But along the way, she suddenly decides that it would be a good idea to stop and do some skin diving, literally.
And photography. She's scuba diving.
She's scuba diving, but I'm just being silly because she's pretty much naked. Yeah. But it's like this whole ridiculous thing where she's wearing this like string thong thing and like just like, oh, you know what? Why do I need a bikini top? I'll just go bare-chested. And there's like a lot of scenes of her swimming around like this with her scuba outfit or
touching
non-outfit.
The coral.
Yep.
Which is just hands all over the coral.
Yes,
and you're like,
yes.
Oh, this is why we don't have a coral reef anymore.
It's all
Thank
Susan's
you.
Fault. It's all Fulci's fault. And so she's down there and, you know, suddenly a tiger shark makes an appearance. And this is the scene that gets a lot of people talk about this a lot. We saw that review that talks about it, which actually is what made us interested in this in the first place, or at least me. And man, underwater filming, like the amount of time that this woman must have spent underwater to get these shots is was probably heartbreaking. And so this tiger shark stalks her. She comes up above for air.
Let's also point out that this is I think it's been defanged. It has no teeth in its mouth.
It doesn't have teeth at all, probably because it's this poor thing. I mean, I felt so bad for the shark in these scenes.
It gets mauled. Like the zombie who shows up
is
hugging
like riding
it. Is hugging on it. I mean, the shark
looks confused, really confused.
Let's just say PETA probably had nothing to do with this movie.
Yeah, this is pretty rough. I actually tried to find out more about this scene, and I'll do a little bit more research later to see if there's anything. But yeah, all I could think of was like, oh my goodness, this poor animal. Like, I know tiger sharks aren't the most sympathetic of creatures, but what this shark had to go through for these scenes.
It also rams the boat at one point and knocks everybody over, and you're like, okay, that was not a... It's not that big of a shark.
No. So. And then, but it encounters the underwater zombie. And you know what? His makeup was pretty solid. He just makes
for
his
underwater.
Underwater. And he's just all like tearing stuff up, including the tiger shark. Suddenly, but you know, what did you think of Susan's miraculous escape by using the coral? Like, I don't know how that was supposed to work.
She
hits it
in
the face.
In
and it's like, oh no.
So she broke a piece of coral off the reef. Thank you again for your environmental stewardship. And then she rubs it in his eyes and he goes, ah, as zombies are prone to do, you know, react and be like, ah, there's something in my face and hold his face. So kind of a non-zombie reaction. But speaking of difficult things to shoot, that guy, the actor, he doesn't have oxygen.
No. And I don't know how they were doing it. So that's why I wanted to find out a little bit more about them filming that scene.
There's lengthy scenes of him like doing like a matador thing with the shark, right?
Yeah, and then he hugs it, he's riding it,
there are edits in there, but yeah, like some of these shots are like several seconds long and you're like, oh, wow. So which maybe they just did it all in one take,
maybe, but man. but even if you don't watch this whole movie, this whole sequence is worth watching.
Yeah, it's so great. And again, the music really amps up the tension here. It's a great scene. It's so good.
And then Susan comes up, obviously, tells them there's a man down there, and they're like, I don't know what to think about that. And then they don't even talk about that again.
No. Wow, that was odd. What was that man doing underwater with the shark?
Right. But because the shark rammed the boat so hard, it kind of messed up their drive shaft. So they had to go to this island, which miraculously turns out to be the cursed island that they've been looking
for.
And meanwhile, things have been happening on this island. We've got the doctor who has been studying this mysterious illness, his wife who is quite dramatic, and is apparently she is a Greek actor who is now a lawyer in Bermuda. So that's kind of funny.
That is funny.
Yeah, but the doctor is played by Richard Johnson. His wife is played by Olga Carlatos. Her name in the film is Paola. And she is really dramatic and just wants to leave the island.
She wants to leave. She accuses her husband of being insane and a monster. And
He smacks her. She drinks.
Smacks her in the face. Yeah.
It's really dramatic.
And then he's like, "I'm going, Miguel. You guard the house." And Miguel's like, "No problem, boss."
Yep.
Which is funny later because Miguel also just in a couple scenes later just is like, "I'm out of here."
Yep. him and his dog just take off. But basically, this is all like islanders have been. Talking about the fact that people that they thought were dead are rising. They're all at the hospital where the doctor, Dr. Menard, is studying them and experimenting to try to, I guess, find a cure. And they're like slowly dying and then, I guess, coming back to life. But he's stopping them from reanimating by shooting them in the head, which is what we saw at the beginning.
Based on that, that does seem to be what he's up to every day. And he explains later on that he's trying bacteriology, virology, radiology.
Yeah, everything.
He's trying all of the sciences, the best practices.
But apparently the voodoo is too strong for all of this, and that's the only explanation.
But he doesn't believe in voodoo. But so he does seem to just be like not a normal, but he's like an island doctor doing his best. He's not an evil monster.
They never portray him as this. So then it's weird that we see this weird scene in the beginning.
Right.
I don't know, man.
Like, why? And even in the first scene where he was shot only in silhouette, you're like, oh, and he has an evil voice. He is an evil person. And then his wife is like, you're a bad man. And so we're like, oh, okay, Dr. Menard is a bad guy. But then he's just like a freaking doctor trying to stop a zombie apocalypse.
Right, and he has like his nurse that's been helping him, and both of them just seem very downtrodden every time somebody dies. So it's sort of like they have to keep like burying these people in this mass pit, a burial pit. And so it's just like this weird, strange thing.
I mean, he's not very nice to Lucas.
No. And, you know, suddenly, and apparently they're cut off from everybody, which is weird because you do see some functional boats hanging out. So it's sort of like some people could have been able to get off the island.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then our little group of strange Americans comes in to try to fix their boat and they keep setting off like a flare gun.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately the doctor goes to pick them up, fills them in pretty quickly that Anne's father was one of the people that was a victim and has died, and then explains why he sent the ghost boat up to New York. So it's like, oh, it's your fault, man.
Wait, I must have missed that. Why does he say he sends the boat?
Because her father wanted her to have... They do a little flashback, and the father wrote a letter to her and made him promise to get the letter to her. So he sent the boat up there to get her the letter.
With a zombie on it, though?
Apparently with a zombie or with somebody that must have been infected and maybe, like, reanimated along the way. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that flashback was dumb, except I guess it does explain why the boat was sent. But he's just like, I'm going to die now. Make sure
my little
this gets to my beloved.
Boat girl gets this.
It was a weird flashback.
And, you know... I don't remember quite the sequence of things, but we do have a flash to back to the house with his dramatic wife.
I think that happened before the Americans even got to the island.
It did, but we should talk
about
it. That's
a messed up scene, obviously.
Okay. So apparently one of the reasons why Fulci's films were viewed as being so, like, he had this thing that he would do in almost every film, which was basically having something done to some, like, grotesque, weird scenes with people's eyes being blinded. Like, so in this case, she's showering all innocently, but with apparently a full-length mirror so you can see how great she looks. And, of course, Miguel and his dog have taken off at this point, and a zombie attacks. And, you know, it's a pretty long scene where she tries to barricade the door and ultimately she gets a splinter through her eye. And apparently that effect is something that he uses in just about, there's something like that in every film that it's like a signature thing that he does.
Well, I mean, I don't blame him because it was a really good effect.
It was gross.
It looked amazing. And
yes.
It was strong. Like, I wanted to look away, but I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
So eye impalement is his thing. And
if you got to have a thing, you know, make it something memorable, I guess.
Yeah. So, and again, the makeup, and it's just gory and nasty and that kind of thing. And It's his thing. So,
A lot of the zombie makeup is so-so, but every so often there's a scene. There's one shot. I think it's when Menard goes to pick up the Americans. Of like a zombie in the distance in the street of the village, and he's just kind of tottering around mm-hmm. in the way that they do, and he's shot mostly in silhouette, but it works so well to me. Like, oh yeah, okay, there's zombies in the village now. When they get close up, I mean, he does all these things to make them gross, like the worms in the eyes, the worms in the mouth,
yep,
the weird paste or whatever it is that he puts on them.
Like they look a little lichen, like it looks almost like moss and lichen, and things are kind of taking them down. So, I mean, there are things that are more successful than others, and I think he probably was picking and choosing what he could do. He does rely on a lot of the, like, especially in the gorier scenes, just a lot of like, it's so much blood that you can't pay attention to how disgusting this is, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Or there aren't like a ton of details. So spoiler alert, Paola gets killed by the zombie and then is left to be eaten by a little horde of zombies. And
I mean, at the end of the eye impalement scene, she's not dead.
No.
Like when we cut away from her, she's getting like pulled along or something, but yeah, she's still alive. However, the next time we see her, she is totally.
Yeah. And, you know, despite all the sort of activity, the doctor basically leaves it to this group of Americans who he's just sort of like read into what's happening and says, hey, can you go check on my wife?
Go see my wife. Well, he doesn't think there's any zombies on this side of the island, but he knows that there are zombies on the island. And he just spent last night, I mean, there's a scene of his nurse waking him up on the beach with a bottle of booze in his hand.
Yeah, but it's like, you send them along, they don't even know where the house is. He's like giving them very vague directions, like, oh, go check on my wife. And of course we know what they're going to find, and they find and this is sort of where it gets, like, finally gets into the overwhelming numbers, but they find her being eaten disgustingly by these horde of zombies, which apparently they're able to sneak up on this group of four people really stealthily, which is like, these are not stealthy zombies. They're just,
yes, they are. They don't moan. They're not groaners.
Yeah, but they make rustling noises everywhere. And yeah. I don't know, man. They
mostly, you know that they're coming because the synthesizer tells you.
Yes, the synthesizer definitely warns you. You hear that synthesizer? It's foreboding.
It's not a good thing.
And I
also like how a lot of these zombies walk around with their eyes closed.
They do. Well,
not something you've seen. I mean, some of them definitely have their eyes open too, so it's not like all of them, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And I will say, these zombie extras definitely deserve some kudos, because they go through a lot. I suspect there are a lot of the same people being used over and over and over again, and man, they get put through their run through the gauntlet of different zombie things. So one of the things that people do also talk about in terms of this movie is the conquistador graveyard, where there's
conquistadores.
And, you know, first of all, they're supposed to be there for like 400 years, which means there wouldn't have been any flesh left on these dudes, especially in a tropical environment. I think not. But in any case,
that helmet is pristine.
It's pristine. So they find this graveyard after they run away from the house, and slowly the zombies rise. And man, they rise out of the dirt. It must have been so disgusting for these actors to have to go through that. Like, it's gross. And this is where he uses all the worms.
They do it so slowly and creepily.
Yep, and with the worms and stuff like that. And, you know, alas, poor Susan, our naked swimmer, gets destroyed in this.
Another part of this that doesn't make a huge amount of sense here is the drumming and the singing that they can hear, that Susan freaks out when she hears it. She's like, it's horrible!
I'm
like,
drums! Getting closer.
I hate it! Damn you, you bastards! I can't take it!
Well,
it's
some
drumming.
It's just drumming,
but we never see the source of it. We've also heard about a juju man, mm-hmm. Like a voodoo
never
priest,
see him.
A shaman. Never see them. Like, so they're definitely leaving a lot of questions unanswered. But you know, the way that they treated the cop in the morgue in New York, that's kind of a way it seems that Fulci likes to do storytelling, is hint at things, then don't really show you anything else to have threads out there, which I kind of dig. But it was a little weird that there's multiple scenes of drumming and singing,
Right.
Where sometimes it seems like the people can't hear it.
Right. And then it's like they can and they're freaking out. So.
And they freak out, yeah. And then Susan gets munched in this scene. Which is a real shame. So I was hoping she'd get to go swimming again.
No such luck. And you know, our Anne and Peter trying to potentially knock boots in the Conquistadore graveyard when his ankle is practically holding on by a thread.
Yeah, how did he get like almost defooted in a fender bender?
Yeah,
like,
it was kind of strange. 5 miles an hour. That was weird. As they were trying to escape, this is how they end up outside of the car, which I guess is supposed to run them through the graveyard and all that stuff. But anyway, his foot goes through various points of being like, I think he has several points where he says he can't go on, but then goes on.
He does do that many times.
Which is kind of awesome.
It's no use.
But in the graveyard, they're kind of making out and some zombie reaches up and tries to grab her hair and she manages to escape from that.
Also, just backing up to, Susan's gurgling death gurgles.
Yes. That
was pretty. It's pretty real, man. Those are good gurgling.
And then poor Brian has to leave her behind, and they finally make it to the hospital after sort of like hospital / church, whatever it is. But they have a big horde behind them, and what's one of the funniest scenes in my opinion is like where they're like knocking on the door of the hospital. Doctor comes over and they're like, let us in, they're right behind us, and they're like a field away from them, still slowly shambling. It was pretty awesome. And within the hospital they are like trying to come up with ways to defend, they're blocking things, but doesn't it feel like they kind of are blocking things in a strange way? Brian seems to be the only one doing anything and then like it's sort of like he's battening down the hatches but forgets some really key hatches,
windows
like that are like
they don't close windows until the zombies are already there. Like they have a while to close windows and they really don't get on that.
Right, and they barricade stuff. They come up with some like kerosene Molotov cocktail things. And I will say that just in terms this scene actually had me worrying for the extras who were playing the zombies.
There's people just wandering around on fire.
It's not just they're wandering around on fire. It's like they're on fire, and then like they're showing the effect of like his arms melting off. They have like the zombies kind of melting, but not melting. And it's like there were real people who had to actually do these stunts.
Guy with the arm, he's got like long hair. And he's kind of like tilting his head away from his burning arm.
What did I get into? Maybe those like, I don't know. Like, I guarantee you they were not paid a lot of money for this. And maybe he was even just like an extra on the set, like a stuntman or like a makeup guy. And he's like,
I'm sure they only light people on fire who are like well trained.
I know, but still, it was pretty. I was like, if you watch through, because I rewatched the scene a few times. Some of those extras are not exactly happy. it is impressive. But the plan of the plot, as it goes with the plot, these people are in a burning building.
Yeah, they lit their own wooden shelter on fire. Right. But the building's made of balsa wood. Like people are snapping through doors, and Brian blows a hole through one of the window shutters, meaning that there's also a hole there. So at some point, they just walk in through the back door, which apparently nobody bothered to secure.
Right.
You know, this is not a good place for them to be. They were like, this is it, we made it. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, it lasted 30 seconds. And it's full of zombies because they have a bunch of dead people inside that they haven't tied up. Like, they've been tying up dead people in this hospital since
forever.
The beginning of the movie.
And time they forget, and suddenly the nurse is taken out, all the helper, the doctor's taken out. Everybody's gone except for our trio. And they finally make it out of the building after burning the crap out of it.
It's a pretty long scene of them shooting and throwing Molotovs. And then, zombies on the other side of like some burning logs.
And we knew it was going to happen, but Susan makes a return and bites Peter. Or sorry, Brian, rather. And they manage to, you know, and it is a good thing because Brian's like, oh, make like you need to kill her. And Peter kills her for Brian because Brian is incapable of doing it. And there's some good things where they're like taking out like the zombies' heads and that kind of thing. So they know they got to do that. And ultimately, they make it to their broken boat. And
Yeah, at some point, I guess the boat turned out not to be as broken as they thought it was.
Right, because now they can kind of drive, but slow, to another port, which is weird. And here's where all of it gets tied together, because Brian, of course, being bitten, dies. And it's actually, like, I feel like his fever and his sort of death scene, or close to the death scene, they don't actually show his full death on camera, but no. It's pretty good. He seems miserable.
I mean, also, during the course of this film, people have gone from, like, a few days of sickness before turning to, well, Lucas gets bit on the arm in the church scene at the end, gets bit on the arm, and then 30 seconds later gets up and kills the nurse.
Yeah. They do. They definitely take liberties with the timeline in terms of the turning.
There have been a couple of inconsistencies.
Yep.
So Brian looks like he dies the day after he gets bit, or the next morning.
Yeah, it could also be due to his major sunburn. So.
Right? That could have had a contributing factor. And I love the way that this ends, too, where they're like, all right, we better lock him in the bathroom and take him back to New York. He's our proof. Otherwise, people are going to think that we're crazy. Let's listen to the news.
Yeah. And, of course, they listen to the news. And what's happened is that New York has been overrun by zombies, apparently from that one zombie cop. And don't forget
the guy that they shot and fell into the...
Maybe,
harbor.
But he's in the harbor, and maybe he's just walking his way back to the island. I don't know.
Maybe.
But anyway, and it shows
fighting
this,
some sharks.
And it shows it flashes to this scene where you see a bunch of zombies walking across the Brooklyn Bridge, which also must have been pretty expensive to do. I don't think they could have done that without getting the permits. And that's kind of like where they end it, where basically the whole world is zombified.
Well, New York.
But the islands. So more than just New York. It's going to... New York is the whole world, Stuart.
I know. I'm sorry. I know you think that, but there's other parts of the world out there.
Anyway, I overall really enjoyed this and laughed out loud on a bunch of scenes. Oh, I thought this
was
great.
I was laughing out loud for sure.
To me, this was enjoyable. I think if you're into the genre... It's great. I will say, just on a happier note, Fulci, who always felt like his films were not appreciated, actually was able to come to a horror film fest shortly before he died. I think it was even in the year that he died, in 1996. And people showed up like through the snow to get his autograph, like all these crazy like horror film buffs. And apparently he was like shocked that he had a following. So I do like the idea that he basically, he was so upset about the fact that he wasn't considered a serious director, but was able to come here and see that people did appreciate some of the things that he had done. So it was for the Fangoria Horror Convention in 96. Oh. Any other comments before we wrap?
No, I mean, what fun.
I know. It was a lot of fun. So I say go for it. Definitely not safe for kids, though, in terms of the gore and the nudity and stuff
Since
like
when
that.
When is anything that we watch safe for kids?
I know. I just had to add it. And what are we gonna review next time?
What had we said we were going to do? Were we going to do Fear the Walking Dead now, or are we going to do Jim Jarmusch next week?
We got to do Jim Jarmusch, I think, because we're so close to it. So Jim Jarmusch's film, The Dead Don't Die, is being released widely in the U.S. This coming week. And I'm going to see it, and hopefully Stuart is going to see it, should his local movie theaters cooperate. So
the signs look good so far.
But if you have any comments or have seen Zombie 2 or Zombies or whatever this thing is called, please let us know. Send us your comments. reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com on the Twitters, reanimatedpcast. Or you can leave us a note on our site, reanimatedpodcast.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for listening, and bye-bye.
Until next time. Ciao.
Just been informed that zombies have entered the building. They're at the door. They're coming in!